Welcome to Business Watch. The South African Reserve Bank's Monetary Policy Committee is set to increase the repo rate later today, with consensus among most analysts and economists that the hike will be larger than the previous meetings. A Reuters poll on Friday showing that a majority, 16 out of 24 of those analysts surveyed, expect the MPC to increase the pace of its interest rate hiking cycle. A 50 basis points hike is already penciled in to 4.75%. The Bureau of Economic Research said it's also shifted its stance from 25 bips to 50 bips expected. The challenge, though, for the bank is to strike the right balance between fighting exogenous inflation and supporting a weak economic recovery. South Africa's economic activity slowed down in April, but it's still showing some growth, according to the insights from the latest monthly data in the Bank Serve Africa Economic Transaction Index, the BETI, which measures EFT-originated transactions. We saw the ABSA PMI dropping to a barely positive 50.7 in April, down from 60 in March, and this is the lowest PMI reading since July of 2021, when production was affected by the looting and rioting in KZN and parts of Gauteng, as well as stricter lockdown regulations. And given the surprisingly poor recent mining figures, economic growth is being revised downwards as rates are expected to rise. It's not looking good. Well, there's lots to discuss with Warwick Lucas, head of Galileo Securities, and Annabel Bishop, chief economist at Investec. Warwick, firstly, what is the FRA, the forward rate agreement market, saying about the rate path from here in South Africa?
All right, Michael, so that's a relatively technical question, but I suppose we could probably say that the market is pretty much expecting a 50 basis point hike. And after all, I suppose that should be no surprise, given the consensus figure of 16 out of 24 that you read in there. I mean, when a consensus figure is looking like that, you're pretty sure that that rates are going to reflect something similar there. Yeah. As to the debate as to whether or not it's needed, well, that's a separate issue entirely, of course.
Isa Mflanga, chief economist at Alex Forbes, joins us now as well. Isa, thank you very much. We thought you had been waylaid by load shedding. Great to have you with us. Annabel, firstly, let's just touch on what confronts the MPC as it meets and the balance of forces at play that are likely going to influence its deliberations before this decision.
Yes, thanks, Michael. Look, I think there's quite a lot of forces it has to consider. You know, the reality of the situation is it's going to be a fairly difficult meeting for the MPC from the point of view that it has so many different areas to look at, both what's happening globally and, of course, what's happening domestically. And if you obviously have a look at what's happening globally, the United States hiking its interest rates by 50 basis points at its meeting in May, and, of course, now the Reserve Bank meeting on Thursday, and also widely expected to hike by 50 basis points. So some may think, you know, taking it cue from the Federal Reserve Bank. But domestically, of course, we've seen inflation very sticky, very high. You know, inflation coming out at 5.9% today for CPI inflation, and of course 5.9% in March. And going into May, it's likely to rise further. It's likely to reach about 6.2%. And in fact, in June, Mark, we've got it at 6.8%. Now, that's the peak in the current inflation cycle that we've got at the moment. Obviously, factors can change and new information can come through. But the bottom line is that we're now likely to see inflation about 6% this year. And what sticky really means is it takes quite a while to come down. So I think the Reserve Bank's going to be concerned about second round effects. That's happening globally as well as locally. We know we have very, very high inflation globally. And of course, worries about the global economic slowdown as well, risk of actually recession globally. And certainly, it seems quite likely that economic growth in the last quarter of last year is probably not going to lift much over this year as well. So the economy at best flatlining, if not weakening. Now, for South Africa, that means a very weak economic environment. Of course, the Reserve Bank's got to confront this as well. If the global economy risks recession and goes into recession, then of course the feed-through effect to South Africa could also be for much slower economic growth than anticipated, if not contraction. And that's really where we sit at the moment. You know, the commodity prices are extremely elevated, contributing to the stickiness of inflation, but of course as well, finding ourselves in an environment where we actually risk stagflation. You know, yeah. Very high inflation globally, even, you know, high inflation domestically, and of course slowing economic growth. So the Reserve Bank's probably going to look at the balance of risks, and I think from July we might start seeing 25 basis point hikes. I don't think we'll be lucky enough to get one tomorrow. I think obviously Thursday we're still looking at a 50 basis point lift.
Isa, given all of that, how do you see the SARB interpreting the global developments, the Fed hiking by 50 basis points, the risks of increased recession with slowing economic growth? I know you said in the past, front load, give yourself some room. Is that still the case?
It is still the case, Michael. I think, you know, the one thing that we need to really take into account is that the SARB does not move on a one-to-one with the US Fed. If you look historically, that is not supported by any evidence. They do consider domestic factors, but also they do consider global factors to the extent that they filter through into the South African economy. So if we see the rand continuing to be resilient, then we might be pushing from importing inflation into the domestic economy. The bigger impact will be the slowing global growth that impacts South Africa's economic growth. There is no way the South African economy can do well in an environment where global growth is moderating. So that will counter, you know, the inflationary views as far as the SARB's response is. But again, if we look locally, we have a potential 350 addition in terms of the petrol prices that will add to inflation. Yes, Annabelle's viewpoint on inflation, I agree with that. Very sticky on the upside, bridging the upper target of the inflation band for about three months or so. But I think the more important one is inflation expectations. Where are they? They have de-anchored away from 4.5%, closer to 5%. And that is what the SARB is going to be extremely concerned about. But they have one of two choices. Do they front load the interest rate hikes and turn inflation while risking significant slowdown in growth? Or they become moderate over the course of the hiking cycle to protect economic growth? I think they are likely to take the latter to be moderate, but they should take the former to front load interest rate hike, which is what I believe they're going to do tomorrow with the 50 basis point hike, followed by 25 basis point hikes subsequently.
Annabelle, I just want to come back to that inflation number that we saw out today, 5.9%. I was somewhat surprised, given the inflationary forces that we're being buffeted by. Yes, there was some reprieve in the petrol price, but we are still seeing petrol prices increasing, food prices increasing, and at 5.9%, no change from the prior month. What did you make of that CPI print?
You know, Michael, interesting thing about CPI is it is calculated from the 7th of the month, so the 7th of April, back to, the 8th of March. And it's really reflecting a lot of what happened in March. Yes, of course, the change in the fuel price early in April. But what we actually find is that the rand, which has seen substantial weakness recently, and of course not supportive all of inflation, you know, above 16 rand to the dollar, and of course at risk of approaching 17 rand to the dollar, if we continue to experience this very negative risk-off environment globally, you know, the risk aversion that's elevated in global financial markets as a consequence of these increased worries about global growth, you know, that's a huge concern. So I think, you know, trying to understand today's inflation figure in that context would not be correct. You really need to sort of look at the inflation figure, which is printed today for April, in the March context, and of course the very early April context. Now recall the rand really started seeing this very substantial weakness from the middle of April. Of course, that's when your global multinationals, when your IMF, your World Bank started to revise down their global growth forecast very, very substantially, spooking markets. You know, and you know, if we have a look at what happened in March, we certainly did see that elevation in commodity prices, but I think there was an anticipation that commodity prices would come off more steeply than they have. They wouldn't be so sticky, as I said earlier. And of course, you know, the big risk that we've really found is that this war in Russia, the Russian-Ukraine war, has persisted for longer. So, you know, the inflation figures, as we said, are likely to jump later in the year, moving to about 6.8% in June. But the figure in April really reflects the environment where I think perhaps not all the cost pressures had come through. And, right. You know, we like to see them increasingly come through in the following months. Perhaps, you know, there was a bit of holding back from retailers and other areas. Unfortunately, I think that's not going to be the case now. And we're probably going to find ourselves really experiencing a worsening inflationary environment in the remaining few months of the first half of this year.
I mean, I already had that conversation with the CEO of Transaction Capital through its SA Taxi business. Many of its customers held off on passing price increases through the COVID pandemic and have held off up until this point. They can't continue to do that with the rising petrol cost up 28-29% year to date. That's going to start feeding through into transport costs as well. Are you saying, Annabelle, Isabel, just stay with you for a second longer, that you see inflation peaking at around 6.8% later this year. Does it have further to go? And then what does that by implication mean for the rate path for the MPC?
Well, you know, currently we expect it to peak at 6.8. I think this year has seen some unexpected shocks, whether it's been the, you know, the war in the Ukraine, obviously the United States suddenly ramping up its monetary policy normalization much faster and higher interest rate increases. I think the concern certainly is that, you know, our expectation, or just to answer your question quickly, for inflation to move towards the end of this year is to move down to about 5.4%, next year drop to, you know, around about 4.7. So those are expectations of inflation. You know, they certainly dovetail with some other expectations out there as well. But the bottom line is that the Reserve Bank targets inflation 6 to 18 months out, really up to 24 months out. And of course, looking at inflation at the end of this year, really looking at inflation by next year, there has been an upward creep. I think they're going to want to hike interest rates earlier to try and control this. But again, we still remain in a risky environment. The big risk, really, Michael, is that inflation becomes embedded. High inflation figures become embedded. And, you know, if we move to 6.8% in June, of course, you know, seeing wage negotiations at that point, we start to see very, very high wage negotiations, difficulty settling close to the midpoint of the target at 4.5%, which is what they seek. And that's why the Reserve Bank, I think, is going to want to act quickly to really push up inflation to try and curb, you know, this high inflationary environment. It's all very difficult, you know, the situation we've fallen into, Michael, because a lot of it's supply side pressures.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And considering that monetary policy is powerless to prevent local inflation when driven, as it is, by imported global inflation and the oil price and the weakening rand, just how effective this is and the risks on the other side of entering into stagflation as a result, a very difficult balancing act. Warwick, I want to move on to Eskom. And I think, you know, it's interesting to see that those wage negotiations are now entering into Eskom as well, with unions now demanding in excess of inflation wage increases at the power utility that's really struggling and only getting by on government bailouts at the moment. And as we know, obviously, one of the key risks to economic growth. It just underlines the kind of precarious position that the South African economy finds itself in.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's obviously very tricky. I think there's a host of factors around Eskom. I mean, first of all, the fact that it struggles with load shedding and so on. I mean, it's a kind of localized supply side factor that we've imposed on ourselves there. I mean, it's a physical brake on the economy. But bizarrely enough, I mean, even if we said, well, okay, if Eskom was functioning well, would we hike rates more aggressively? Well, not necessarily so, because a more effective Eskom would also be delivering efficiencies through the economy as well. I mean, as far as the wage negotiations go, I mean, it also highlights the structural inefficiencies that we have in our whole wage cycle in this country. I mean, yeah, for one thing, I mean, there's obviously a hugely adversarial negotiation process, but I think that's accentuated by the fact that unemployment is so high and there is so much dependency on those that are employed then carry many people on one paycheck, yeah. Which I think is sort of cementing adversity into the process. So we need a lot of wins in employment to actually get a lot of particularly youth unemployment somehow dented and start taking the pressure off those few paychecks there, because there's a cycle here of dependency that actually is quite dangerous, I think.
Yeah, that does factor into these negotiations and make it so much more complicated and adversarial across the economy. In the mining sector, we see clearly the issue around Neil Froneman's 300 million rand payout and angering workers there. That strike going into the 10th week. And I've had some suggestions of linking the top earners paid to the lowest earners and then having tax at a sliding scale based on that. I'm not sure I'm a fan of imposing any more tax on South African business in this environment. But Isa, given all of these risks, what do you see as the policy options facing the MPC as it meets?
Look, it's a very tough meeting for the SAP. You know, global inflation is rising. Yes, it's rising much faster than what we have. A lot of what we have is supply-side factors that the SARB cannot control and that they should not be responding to. But I think the worry is the pass-through effects that Annabel mentioned earlier on, the pass-through effects of supply-side inflation translating to demand-side inflation through higher wage settlements that we are speaking about now. Government employees asking for 10%, Eskom employees, mining sector asking for significantly higher than inflation wage settlements, linking to what Warwick just mentioned now, too few individual work, and as a result, there's too much pressure for those that actually work, and they demand more. The impact on the fiscus of government requests, 10%, roughly 70 billion, it's not significant. It's about 1.5% of GDP, but it has to be taken out of public infrastructure investment, which means it has to, it will lead to lower growth. So it's a lot of things to consider. But if we are in the SARB's shoes, their mandate is to maintain price stability, of course, in the balance of in the interest of balanced growth. So you would say, if you are an MPC member, growth is weak, not because interest rates are too high. It is because the likes of Eskom are not providing enough electricity for industry to operate. And we're not benefiting from the commodity prices because Transnet is not able to ship the mining commodities quickly enough. And that impacts also on all, a host of other industries. So the rest of the economy must respond to lift economic growth and let the SARB deal with inflation, which itself is also a cost or a tax on economic growth. So I think those are the factors the SARB would have to consider. But ultimately, their mandate is price stability, and the rest of the economy must respond by lifting economic growth.
Well, we know it's been a feature of the MPC statements that the Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Kgatyago likes to remind government that it is ultimately in its control to speed up economic reforms. It's not the role of monetary policy to do the heavy lifting. Annabel, I think we need to be very mindful, though, of what is a structural economic reform. We can't be congratulating government for ensuring that trains arrive on time or that the lights switch on when you flick a switch. I mean, those are the basics, or water flows from a running tap. Those are basics. Those aren't deep structural economic reforms. What are the real economic reforms here? Let's get into the weeds of this, because we're in this trap of praising a government for just doing what any government should do at a base level.
Perhaps they're not doing it and they shouldn't be praised. You know, Michael, I think, you know, the great concern I have is that we obviously are still facing huge problems on the rail, ports, road, the transport networks, which is eating into higher into the businesses of the agricultural sector. It's pushing through higher costs for food prices, adding to inflation. Excuse me. It's also, of course, as well, inhibiting economic growth. It's severely causing a massive problem with the ability of our economy to benefit from the commodities boom. And of course, you know, with countries like China, with Russia, obviously seeing, you know, some curbs on exports for different reasons, of course, with other countries around the world seeing protectionism increasing, inhibiting their exports. South Africa had a golden opportunity to meet increased demand. It hasn't been able to do so. So I think, you know, from the reform perspective, well, from electricity, I would certainly like to see a severe drop in the regulatory burden. You know, it's very difficult to get that 100 megawatt contribution to the grid because the regulatory environment is so difficult to plow through. Of course, if you have a look at the other areas in terms of regulations as well, both the electricity sector and across the board, also very inhibiting for government. We have a lot of lip service to this. We have the individuals working in Ramaphosa's work groups, you know, talking about it all, everything needs to be done. We have comments that, you know, the government's the president's going to be looking at reducing the red tape. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen quickly, it doesn't happen fast, and it's as inhibiting for foreign investors to come into South Africa, whether it's obviously to increase infrastructure investment in the electricity sector, or in fact more broadly as investors into the economy for fixed direct investment. And that's a huge concern because, you know, that's where your stable jobs are created, whether it's even the mining sector. If we have a look at the huge problems we're facing there in terms of the abstraction to increased explorations to actually getting the minerals out of the ground, extracting them. Even I would talk about the oil industry and, of course, you know, the problems that have been factored there. So I don't see a consistent, strong approach to encouraging private sector investment, to encouraging private sector growth. I still see some departments hanging on to sort of state control to command type economies, excessive regulation, which stifles business or just prevents new business activity. And I think these are all the structural issues which are highly problematic. You know, we've heard the president talk in the State of the Nation address, other areas as well, of course, that we need not necessarily the word privatization, but increased private sector participation, although, of course, that word's also been used as well. And these, of course, are hugely helpful to try and resolve or erode down South Africa's structural issues. But we need to bear in mind as well that these will take a long time to fix and repair. And, of course, work is going on. But, I mean, such simple things as the theft that's happening on the railway lines, you know, we obviously need to beef up security there. We're just ordering the correct parts for the locomotives. And many other facts. We could chat all day, Michael, on these issues.
But yeah, my point is all of those things, again, should be expected of an ordinary, efficient, well-run government. Let's not even talk about what could be turned around and be termed a deep structural economic reform. I mean, those are just the basics. The government isn't doing them. On the bright side, though, we are, as is seeing Bureau Economic Research data released yesterday, seeing gross fixed capital formation by the private sector, a real 5% growth this year, 5.1% growth the next year. That's following deep declines. That's clearly a good sign, but not nearly enough.
Indeed, it's not nearly enough to what we require, but over the last 4 years, we've seen some positive foreign direct investment, which means even the foreign investors have turned a corner as far as their belief in the South African economy is concerned. And we agree absolutely with the BAR in terms of expectations going forward. And if we were to get the structural reforms that Annabelle and what we have been speaking about over the past couple of weeks, I think we can get more investment into the country. But so far, it remains too slow. Energy constraints remain quite binding on us, and we need to see a speed up of that to see faster economic growth. And by the way, we need a minimum of 3% to reduce unemployment rate. Yeah, so far, 2% is not going
to
cut it.
We've got a minute to go. Annabelle, you've already said 50 basis points. Isa, are you going 50?
50 basis points indeed.
Warwick?
50.
There we go. 3 by 50. It's unanimous. Let's see if the MPC is unanimous tomorrow as well. That was Warwick Lucas, head of Galileo Securities, joined by Isa Mplanga, chief economist at Alex Forbes, and Annabelle Bishop, chief economist at Investec, previewing tomorrow's MPC decision.